Here are four principles for living like an American. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for every gift and opportunity. Become a source of love. Once again, these are the times that try our souls. We must find the strength and the courage to rise up to refound America in the spirit of liberty. Welcome, my wonderful, wonderful audience. For the first half hour tonight on Refounding America and Reclaiming Ourselves on Bright Hyon TV, I'm going to be talking about some things that I think are really serious to think about. Are there lasting personality problems developing in people who have had COVID and especially who have had multiple jabs? It's a serious problem, and I just want to bring it to your attention and to get us thinking more about it. And the second half hour, I'm going to have wonderful Patrick Coffin on the show with me. Thank you, as always, for taking seriously the kinds of important issues that we raise here. As always, it's just a good thing to know I get to talk with you every week. And I do mean it when I say you're my wonderful, wonderful audience. Not long ago, I was invited to be interviewed by the great European lawyer. He now lives in America, Rainer Fulmich. And he had me on with Naomi Wolf, someone who, you know, that beautiful writer who is talked about, you know, the effects of COVID-19 in such a beautiful and touching manner. And at the time, we began talking about concerns that people who had COVID, but even more so people who had increasing numbers of the COVID injections, the jabs, whatever we want to call these RNA and DNA vaccines, that some were seeming like they were changed people, that they didn't relate the same way anymore, they weren't engaging as much, they weren't as caring as much. Now, this isn't going to be everybody, and I don't want to alarm you about yourself if you're not feeling that way or getting messages like that from anyone. But there was a concern about people they were meeting. Naomi talked about being in New York City and the waiters coming by and not sensing the same energy, the same connectivity coming from them. Now, more recently, a great physician, he's a German, I think he came from Thailand because he had hoped to be more free, and ran into COVID-19 and wrote, along with his wife, an amazing book, one of the early books on COVID-19. That's Sushrit Bhakti, Dr. Bhakti. And he, in a speech in Rome, began to describe certain changes that were being found on autopsy, which seemed to be what he called pathognomonic. What does pathognomonic mean? Of the injections. That means that when you see these changes in the brain, it means the effects of the unique effects of the vaccines. It really identifies one particular disease. That's something that's pathognomonic. Probably haven't said that word since medical school, which is over, I think, a century ago. He gave this amazing speech in Rome, and he started describing these kind of small, barely visible, microscopically visible changes throughout the brain, scattered throughout the brain, of hemorrhages and clotting. Nothing large enough to affect somebody's movements grossly or to give them a speech impairment, let's say, abnormal movement. Nothing that they might not necessarily even realize that something was happening to them. It was interesting, if you look up his speech online, his talk online, and there were sirens going off in the background as he was describing this tragic situation. Well, this is something I know a great deal about, and I'll be publishing one of my columns on America Out Loud about this in a week or so. So you can get all this data I'm giving you today, including the Bhakti reference. And I first became aware of these kinds of changes back in the 1970s when I was examining the problem of electroshock treatment. What was it doing to the brains of humans and animals? Of course, the profession of psychiatry, very much like we're seeing now with the entire profession of medicine, didn't want to admit to any kind of damage. And I wrote the first book on brain damage, medical book, my medical publisher, although I tried to make it so that any lawyer or family who had a victim of shock treatment could read and understand the book. 1979, Electroshock, Its Brain Disabling Effects. Give you an idea again about how much you can't trust doctors. Nobody followed up that book with more books and more articles about this. This profession actually then just sort of stopped looking at all at brain damage from electroshock. Until very recently, just before COVID, I was involved as the expert in a lawsuit against Somatics Inc., one of the shock machine manufacturers. And I wrote a report for a judge, because they wanted the case thrown out of court, of course, the manufacturer. And I wrote a paper for the court, a report for the judge to show that we had enough evidence, scientific evidence on brain damage to legitimately have a case and to go to trial. And the judge agreed. He said, yes, there's enough here to go and let a jury decide whether the patient was brain damaged and harmed by the treatment. This was a shock to the shock company, and they immediately sent reports into the FDA they'd been withholding about. They had these reports of long-term memory loss and possible brain damage from patients, that they found similar statements in the literature going back a ways, and that they were going to warn their doctors, which they went ahead and did in their Somatics Inc. Booklets that go along with the shock machine, which is called Thymotron, that they warn doctors, it's up to them to tell, not up to us, the machine company, it's up to you to tell patients. They pushed it off on them and tell patients about these injuries that they can get from electroshock treatment. I guarantee you it hasn't changed much of any doctor's behavior. And you're seeing that now so well and so disillusioning fashion about what's going on with the COVID-19, that bad treatments they push and the good treatments they reject and the awful vaccines, which we're not going to be talking about, that they project and put force onto us. So the animal experiments, some were very good controlled. They show one by a man named Hartilius back in the 50s. They showed, and by the way, shock's more dangerous now because they're using 10 times the amount of energy of trauma. 10 times the trauma we used to use, showed these widespread, called petechial or tiny hemorrhages around the blood vessels. Now, it would be heaviest under the electrodes, which are often right on the forehead, or one of them at least is on the forehead and one's in the back, but there's always one over the frontal lobe. So it damages the highest centers of the brain. And it was a generalized damage. We're not talking about big clots or anything. Talking about microscopic harm to the small vessels. And that's exactly what Dr. Bhakti was describing. I've seen similar damage. I've testified in lawsuits about brain damage, everything from car accidents and psychiatric drugs and ECT and lobotomy to taser injury of a policeman who accidentally got shot in the back of his head by his colleague who was trying to taser a man next to him in the chest. There was so much movement, he hit his colleague. Well, the effect always, pretty much, one of the earliest signs, before you may notice anything else, is this subtle change in personality. It's as if the most sensitive thing in the world is how we relate to each other, how we communicate with each other. My wife can tell if I'm out of sorts sometimes before I can, and I can tell about her before she can. And there's these interactions that take place between people where we just have a sense, maybe not without even identifying it. An anxious person can generate an anxious group. We humans were so social. And we want to be loving. We really do want to relate to each other. That's what we want in our hearts. Even if we're having problems with it, we want to care. We want to be warm with each other. We want to feel loved. And this very complex identity, our social identity, and very closely related to our individual identity, is subtly disrupted even by what might be called, moderate head injury. Even moderate head injury can be catastrophic, actually, in how the patient experiences it. Because being changed is not a good thing, and other people seeing you changed is by no means a good thing. Now, there is hope for these folks. I mean, it's we're still looking. These are related to long COVID injuries that people call a long COVID. They're related to the vaccines. And first of all, one of the main things is simply being as healthy as you can be. You know, not eating junk food, not eating highly manufactured food, eating fresh and healthy food, getting at least moderate exercise. I mean, you don't have to be, the studies don't show necessarily increasing health with increasing intensity. They show that moderate exercise several times a week is very good for people. Increases longevity and how people feel. Basic emotional well-being. I know people who have some brain injury, and I've had clients who have had some patients of some brain injury, and they can surmount it by getting really in touch with a real sense of themselves and how they want to live. And again, the more loving you can live, the more you're going to surmount your issues. And I've really had quite injured patients who have been learning to love more than they had before, going into a new realm of letting themselves feel the presence of God and love, have actually developed better lives after their injuries because they made those efforts. So really want to emphasize for people that even with a brain injury, you're still there. The person's there. The soul is there. The essence of you is there. But we are seeing these changes in people. Dr. McCullough and other scientists in the area are looking at what we can do for this. I recommend that you go to truthforhealth.com. It's .org, I think. Look at the truthforhealth.org. Lee Valeet, Dr. Valeet, V-L-I-E-T, my good friend and editor of our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators. Lee Valeet helped me with the editing of that book. And she has this truthforhealth.org. And you'll find there suggestions for post-COVID treatment. and you'll find there where to find doctors, how to get in touch with them. So if you're seeing changes from the multiple injuries that go along with these vaccines, there is hope for you having an even better life once you get in touch with, really, I'll be blunt, with God and love. It's not just talk. That's the deepest reality there is for our health and well-being. Now, how has this come about? Originally, you know what happens when you get the injection in the shoulder. They told us that whatever happened would stay in the shoulder. You know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Well, I don't think either one of those things is necessarily true. And certainly anybody with common sense in the medical field knew this was a lie. And then we quickly found out that the, say, for example, the mRNA vaccines, a string of RNA is encapsulated in a capsule that penetrates your cells and takes the genetic materials. These are genetic experiments. They didn't do any real research on them. They just did enough research to know that they shouldn't give it to humans. They really did. And I'm going to have an article coming out on that, that they did enough animal research to know they never should give these things to humans. They knew it, which tells you the purposiveness behind their planned harmfulness. That's a hard subject. We talk about it in the book, hard subject, purposely harming humanity. Empires have done that forever, forever and ever and ever. But going back to our subject, the cells are forced, the mitochondria are in the cell are forced to make a spike protein identical, depending on what vaccine you're getting. Originally, it would be identical to the one that the original microbe, the original virus, was making. So the SARS-CoV-2 is, you know, making the spike proteins, and they had the genetic code to do it, and that same genetic code gets injected in you, so your cells start making the spike protein. And in fact, the capsule was built and engineered to cross the blood-brain barrier and to go into the brain, into the testicles, into the ovaries, into the liver. So again, one of the longer-term problems with these spikes that are being created by your own body is that you can get harm long-term to even your fertility. And infertility is growing throughout the Western world right now. There's evidence that the effect is already taking place. So again, COVID's not over. They've inflicted a harm on us. We've got to find strength. Strength comes through love and comradeship and fellow feeling and really taking what you've got there in your brain, whether it's a 86-year-old brain like mine or maybe a 35-year-old one like yours that's functioning at a much more fast and clippy, or, you know, like a better computer. But know that is how much you get the love out, how much the being gets expressed, that matters. So we can overcome, but we've got to see if they have really tried to injure us, and it is not over now, and it's going to be with us as long as we allow the vaccine, so-called, to be given to people, we must stop, absolutely, folks, they're giving them to infants. Remember, there's just no testing. They got through with no testing. Now we have new information. You know, our book, came out in September of 2021, COVID-19 and Global Predators. And a month later, The Real Anthony Fauci came out by RFK, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And RFK has a several pages toward the end of the book in which he talks about who really is on the ground running COVID-19. And now other people are picking up on it, often without saying that there's already considerable detail in RFK's book. They're picking it up and confirming it. And the truth is that the organizational board inside the federal government for COVID-19 has the Department of Defense at the top. And the National Security Council and Advisory Council to the President, made up mostly of, foreign theorists, the people working on our programs for the world, and the Department of Defense, with the Department of Defense really still at the top. And that's making people look at this as a weapon more and more, that this was a biological weapon. Today, I interviewed a dear friend of mine. We call her Scarlett, Li Ming Jan, Yan, Dr. Yan. And I'd love you to listen to that. Ginger and I interviewing a dear friend about everything from her conversion to Christianity, to her fleeing China, to her working in labs at the beginning of COVID-19 in Hong Kong with other Chinese, including outright communists, talking to people who are telling her this is just a biological weapon that's been inflicted on the world by the Communist Party. Well, that ties back into the heavy involvement in the DOD, of the DOD in all of this. But it's a wonderful discussion you can hear on America Out Loud. And it's going to be on the air on Thursday at 5 p.m. on a series they have every day at 5 p.m. We just have Thursdays, mostly by medical people. But me and Ginger together talking with Li Ming Yan, Dr. Yan, Y-A-N, about her spiritual experiences, her political experiences, and what she thinks the Chinese communists, and what we agree, were doing surrounding the release of this and its eventually sending it around the world. So that'll be interesting. But we are dealing with a weapon, and this weapon is going to have long-term effects. We have to find ways to live with it. And maybe at some point there'll be people getting together to teach each other and to learn how, even if you have some mild injury, even if you get much older and your brain doesn't work quite as fast as it used to, that you can love more and more and care more and more and support each other more and more and build a better new world. If we don't build a better new America to stand up to the Chinese communists and to what we call the Western Empire of Bill Gates and NATO and the European Union and Klaus Schwab and Michael Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York, and all these other global predators, if we don't rebuild America, remember that's the name of this show, Refounding America. If we don't refound America, if we don't reclaim ourselves, we don't do those things, we are going to be subjects of a Chinese communist empire, which will be even worse than some other alternatives. It all rests on our getting together and standing up for constitutional America. Well, God bless us all. And I wish you all the really best, and we'll be back for a second interview now with my friend Patrick Coffin. Well, thank you again for being there, my wonderful audience. My guest is, I mentioned earlier, Patrick, my dear friend, Patrick Coffin. A mix-up in timing, so that gave you the opportunity to be with me for the first half hour. And I think he's not back in the studio yet. He's trying to get here. I want to have him on for at least a short time to tell you about some amazing stuff that's coming up that he's doing. In the meanwhile, I want to go back to the theme of intentional harm, because it's really one of the hardest, saddest, most difficult things to deal with for us human beings, is that our government or the people around us might wish us intentional harm. Right now, the Biden administration, in addition to the litany of other things, from cutting off our pipeline so we're no longer energy independent, to opening up our borders so that the character of the country is being changed and being overwhelmed with new people coming in, who are going to be using all of our services, and just really serious problems. The Biden administration is trying to lead the world in giving away national sovereignty. At the end of May, there's going to be a vote at the World Health Organization on a series of amendments. And they failed last year. We put so much pressure on them that they actually didn't put the amendments forward. Now they've been working on them for almost a year. May is coming up again. And these amendments, which are sponsored by the Biden administration, not by China or some other country, by our own country, would rob us of control over our public health and health system if the Director General of WHO, who's a communist thug, determined that our country, in his opinion, he had a suspicion that we might be having a problem of international concern, meaning bothering another nation. And this is, this could be anything, because the World Health Organization considers injustice a health problem, poverty a health problem. Obviously, they think the environment's a world health problem. Everything they can imagine, basically, everything that you can, just feel really good and progressive about for thinking of, they want to impose on us. And we have to stop this. They've got about 40 nations signed on to the original documents, all of the union, the European Union, in Canada, India, Brazil. Literally, they could forcibly, if these amendments are passed, go into any country, use whatever force they could muster, and take over your health system, our health system, the state health system, the community health system, in order to nip in the bud what they consider to be a health problem of international concern. That's pretty scary. At the same time, and those are written by our country, now they're being revised over the past year and they're getting worse. So that could be voted on toward the end of May. In the meanwhile, they have a second thrust, was that building agreements to be made with individual countries, just one major official from the country signing it, our president, our secretary of state, or somebody appointed by the secretary of state, could sign on to this agreement. And it's really a treaty, but they're calling it agreement so that the Senate won't be able to control it, won't have to overlook it. And it too will give up our sovereignty on the suspicion that we have a problem of international concern. And they hate America, so they got plenty of concerns. They hate America. Biden hates America. Why else would he open up the borders? Why else would he shut down the pipeline from Canada so we were no longer energy independent, and so the Canadians were losing a lot of income and a lot of money that we would be paying them? There is an international cabal that we really do describe in detail, the most detail ever done in COVID-19, the global predators. We need to be talking to senators and congressmen about this. We need to be fighting to win the next presidential election with a conservative? And in making up your mind, you know, who to vote for, consider that Trump, while doing a lot of good things like standing up to China, incredibly important, fighting globalism, invited the worst of globalism into our country. They hoodwinked him, and he's not apologized for it. COVID-19 was the major globalist attack of all time on us. That's why I discussed the World Health Organization and their policies, and that's because they've been so important that the globalists like Biden are now relying on World Health to come in and to just continue to tell people that they need, from one threat or another, to be led by what is essentially the United Nations. Now, who runs the World Health Organization of the United Nations? Well, it's a combination of Bill Gates, who supports the World Health Organization, doesn't have to. Remember, never forget that when Trump pulled our money out of there, Gates put more of his money in to compensate. One man. And the Chinese communists have been giving it more and more support. And that's who runs, basically, to a great extent, the communists and what I call the Western Empire. Our big tech companies, all the other wealthy forms of power in America and in the Western world that essentially want globalism and want to work with the communist Chinese and want a weaker America so that they can establish their commercial interests and their power more and more worldwide. It's not much more complicated than that. The banks play a huge role in this. The World Bank, which is a creation partially of the UN, and they describe it as alive with the UN. It's not entirely, it's very hard to figure out what the exact relationships are. But the World Bank has been a major supporter of increasing the power of the World Health Organization. They have a common organization just for the empowerment of the World Health Organization. So these ties run deep. They're very frightening ties. They are real. There's no conspiracy theory in all of this. This is hard data. Ginger and I didn't want to come to these conclusions, but they're there. And again, the only thing that will save us is a revival of Middle American values, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Judeo-Christian tradition. Personally, I think a belief in God is central to it. And one way you know that is that the globalists hate the idea of God. And of course, they hate the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. When they write all about globalism and world governance, they write about it openly now. When they write about those things, and here's Patrick. When they write about those things, they are saying they need to take down America in order to spread globalism. Now, I'm watching Patrick Coffin, and he has, hello, Patrick.
Hi, Peter. Oh my gosh, what an honor to spend time with you. Once again, thanks for your patience. Glad to be here with you.
You have no idea the extent of my patience. I just did an hour and three quarters of an hour show all on my own.
Well, that's proving too much. Now you realize you don't need a second-rate guest. You're a star on your own.
Actually, I love talking to the folks, and I never schedule it in, hardly ever. And I just do it when I get the opportunity. So today was such an opportunity. But I want to jump in with you. You're such a dear man, and I love you, and so does Ginger. And talk about what are you doing right now and who you are. Why don't you just take it? Because we only have 11 minutes and 50 seconds.
Okay, I'll give you the compressed version of everything. I was born and raised in Eastern Canada. I kept trekking west all the way to Southern California. I became a U.S. citizen 2 years ago. Did not wear a mask for any of the interviews, for any of the proceedings. I'm a big believer in not complying with any kind of tyranny. And I have a podcast, The Patrick Coffin Show, and I'm so honored to have found a terrific very clear-thinking business partner named Ryan Moreau. And Ryan and I are launching a very important mental health summit. It's called Hope is Fuel, featuring Dr. Peter Bragan. It's March 18th. So hopeisfuel.com. If you go there and register it, you get $10 off of the premium ticket with P. Bragan 10. I wanted to make that known to your audience. And
I had no idea about that.
Yeah. Something. Some Ginger and I are working some benefits in the background. But the main benefit is that everybody gets 10%. Well, actually, it's $10, which works out to more than 10% off the ticket price. Everyone can watch the talks for free, but if you want access to things like the live Q&A and personalized tutorial coaching, then there's a premium ticket fee. But this is a problem. The problem of hopelessness crosses every political and religious line. Liberals, progressives, conservatives, traditionalists, everyone seems to feel this pall over the world, this kind of sadness of the news getting worse and worse and worse. When I left Catholic Answers Live radio show in 2016 and to do my own show, I felt like we were galloping toward the abyss. But here we are in 2023. I feel like the abyss is galloping toward us. So in addition to your good self talking about depression as the loss of hope, how to find hope without throwing dangerous drugs at your brain, former NBA star Royce White on his generalized anxiety disorder and how that affected his life and how he overcame a ton. He's a red-pilled, 6'8", father of four. Check out Royce White in your travels. Well worth it. He has a new show called Please Call Me Crazy. Dr. Leland Stillman, MD, on how we can know that the big pharma industry exists to keep us sick and how to take your own health into your own hands, be your own researcher, your own doctor to a great extent. Dr. Ann Gillies, who's a specialist in overcoming childhood trauma. It's a great message of hope. She's been doing fantastic work in Ontario, Canada for many, many years against a lot of opposition. Adam Lane Smith. I just want to get all the names out. Adam Lane Smith is a specialist in attachment theory, how your attachment to your primary caregiver in early childhood to a great degree conditions the way you attach to your spouse or don't. Attachment issues, and I know you know all this, Peter, as a psychiatrist, it's at the heart of a lot of people's sadness. They're not self-aware of how they attach and what the roots are of that anxiety. Also one of my personal heroes, Bishop Joseph Strickland. I think he's the top Catholic bishop in the United States from Tyler, Texas. He's going to talk about hope from an eternal perspective. You could say that Hope is Fuel is Christian in essence, but secular in presentation. It's not sectarian. We're not selling a particular religion. We're getting people to look in the mirror and say to themselves, if I get a handle on this sense of hopelessness, how much better a husband or wife can I be? How is my family instantly going to be happier because I've taken my own mental health seriously? And so Hope is Fuel was born thanks to Ryan's. Ryan got the URL in 2014, and it was kind of providential how he and I met and found so much common ground. And now we're honored to do the first one March 18th. We're already planning the 4th of July issue or the edition of Hope is Fuel, Peter, and that's going to be devoted to emotional and spiritual support for law enforcement and military. That's going to be called Hope is Fuel Sheepdog edition. So that's a lot. And so go ahead. I hope that was a lot and a little.
Well, I learned something about what I'm going to be doing from you in this busy, busy world I'm in. My sheepdog. I don't know if she'd like being called a sheepdog. My equal partner, indeed, my dominant partner, as we share our world together. God bless her. Didn't tell me all that stuff. So that's really very, very exciting. I want to correct one idea, and that is, it's not because I'm a psychiatrist that I know about things like attachment, love, and caring. Don't go to a psychiatrist, people, for that. My profession is now totally corrupted by the pharmaceutical industry. Unless your psychiatrist is as old as I am, and there's not too many practicing at my age, you're not going to get anything but drugs and some horrible diagnosis from narcissist up to bipolar. Mm-hmm. Don't go for anything from the psychiatric viewpoint. Find a good therapist, a clinical social worker, a psychologist, marriage and family therapist, or maybe a very rare psychiatrist of somebody who can really vouch for them that he or she does talking therapy. So I feel very strongly about that. I mean, COVID-19, if it's taught us anything, should teach us never to trust pharmaceutical industry about anything. It's that simple.
I keep reading statistics on suicidal ideation and murder and suicide rates that were already beginning to spike pre-2019. So before your book, before COVID hit, now these rates have just skyrocketed. It's a crisis hiding in plain sight. People on some unconscious level are waiting for the next foot to drop. Are we going to have another lockdown? Why in every state do I have to wear this mask just to see my doctor? Why are some countries still requiring it on airplanes? Why is Biden still, I mean, he lifted this emergency condition for May 11th. Why not lift it tomorrow at noon? So people are still living under the shadow of apprehension. And it's very, very hard. It's very hard. Life is hard anyway, right? But if you add one bad news after another, and it's hard to find good news in the news. So we think Hope is Fuel is a great first step antidote to the sense of hopelessness.
Well, I think that's right. Now, you mentioned, that about the pharmaceutical industry thriving or selling sickness. Mm-hmm. This is not an exaggeration, folks. If you get onto psychiatric drugs with a psychiatrist, and unfortunately, probably your internist or your OBGYN or your pediatrician for your kids, they tend to think and encourage you that you just have to stay on these drugs for your rest of your life. That means being sick for the rest of your life, because the drugs will make you sick. They do. They make everybody sick. Even if you feel better, on some level you're sicker. You're just feeling less on psychiatric drugs. And we just need to get rid of this whole idea that psychiatric drugs are an answer. And similarly, if a drug company has the choice between coming up with a drug that will cure diabetes or one that the diabetic will have to take for the rest of their lives in increasing doses, believe me, they're going to be told to pick the drug that they're going to sell to the patient for the rest of their lives. The incentive to cure people, to be honest and honorable, is far weaker than the incentive to keep you on drugs for the rest of your life. In all areas, be wary. Be wary of medicine from now on. I would have been loath to think that way before. It's becoming just intolerably obvious. And I'm so glad to see Patrick using his skills and his marvelous personality and all the stuff that goes with that, his spirituality, to really get the word out. I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing. I'm going to be so happy to do a talk for your great conference.
Looking forward to that, Peter. It's hopeisfuel.com. And I just, I was thinking about the model of patient as customer is the problem, where there's things that are inexpensive, like exercise, like drinking more water, like stop eating your sugar addiction. Those are of no interest to so many mental health professionals. They just want to peddle the drugs. And no one's been out ahead of that for longer and more articulately than you have. So let me ask you a question, because I ask questions for a living. I was reading an article in, I think it was medium.com last summer, on how the Eli Lilly sales and marketing team have finally been exposed in their brilliant identifying a depression with chemical imbalance in the brain, specifically, it's just a matter of serotonin lack. You've been saying this for how many years? People are like, overnight success. Read Dr. Hey, books. This is. Yeah. This is
Ginger and I wrote Talking Back to Prozac in 1994. Still my best-selling book. They're almost 1 million copies.
Wow. Interesting.
1994. And proved it then that there are no biochemical imbalances in the brain until you take the drug. How bizarre. What double think to say your problem's a biochemical imbalance, so we're going to give you drugs which we have shown are causing biochemical imbalances in the brains of rats and mice and whoever else we give it to, proving it's a potentially a really wonderful thing. So we're going to give it to humans who have no biochemical imbalances. The reasoning makes no sense at all. And in fact, the FDA, I don't think, will even allow you to apply for a drug application unless you can show what it is doing to the animal's brain that makes you think it's going to be a success. And so they show that it suppresses serotonin or it stimulates serotonin, doesn't matter which, or it suppresses dopamine or stimulates dopamine. They say, oh, you did this. You showed it has an effect on rats. Let's try it on people. Yeah. This is such a deep craziness that it's the average doctor has no concept of it. No concept.
Could you say that depression is a lack of serotonin the way a headache is a lack of aspirin?
Well, that's a great marketing tool.
Fair
enough. You got 40 seconds left to just tell folks everything you want.
Well, the coupon code PBREGAN10 will get you $10 off of the premium ticket price. The event is free to watch if you just want to consume the talks. We think this is going to be huge. I was on Steve Bannon's War Room, and Steve wants to interview all the speakers, including yourself, Dr. Bregan, before this event. HopeIsFueled.com/events. Gets you that coupon code. Check out all the bios of the speakers there, and there might be something for you. Everyone that I know either knows someone or is themselves in a great crisis of hopelessness, and this is the antidote.
God bless you, and God bless our audience. Thank you for being on, Patrick Coffin.